We are going to continue the hour by talking about the Supreme Court, a number of key cases that we've been following here on the air that a lot of folks are following nationally. One of them is a case that the Supreme Court heard last week, Monday, oral arguments. The final decision won't be for some months. 303 Creative LLC versus Alanis. This is a case out of Colorado involving a wedding website designer who does not want to make wedding sites for same-sex couples, and that runs afoul of Colorado's anti-discrimination law. Does she have the First Amendment freedom of religion right to deny service to same-sex couples? Complicated case, and we're joined on the air by William Marshall, who's a professor at the UNC School of Law and a First Amendment scholar, to talk about it. Professor Marshall, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be here.
So before we get into specifics, general thoughts about the case that folks should know?
Well, this is part of a long line of cases that have First Amendment rights on one side and the interest in promoting equality on the other side. It's not a new issue, but it keeps on going through various machinations depending upon the context in which it rises.
Second time that Colorado's anti-discrimination law has come before the court. The first time was the Kate Baker case, Masterpiece, a couple of years ago. That one was decided on a technicality, really. And this is the case where the Supreme Court is saying, okay, for realsies, we'll resolve this question.
Yeah, they are. I mean, there are technicalities in which they can avoid this one, too,
right,
if they come to an impasse. There's a real question here as to how serious the injury is, because nobody ever went to this website to ask it to create this kind of service. And so the question is whether or not the court will say we need a much more concrete set of facts before we proceed. But they took this case, and maybe this time they're actually going to reach the substantive issues.
This is an interesting question, because part of it turns on, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, part of this turns on the definition of what constitutes an artist, right? But you're giving me a skeptical look, so
Well, I'm not sure. Well, it could be. You could look at it that way, but it's probably more what constitutes speech by the person providing a service. The big issue in the Masterpiece K case was whether or not baking a cake was speech, and being forced to do that was speech. And here, that question comes up again: is being forced to provide a web design or whatever speech, or is it just providing a service in the same way that the sale of furniture is not really speech? So, yeah, the art comes into it, but it's really the basic question: is this speech or not? Or specifically, is it compelled speech? Are you compelling the provider to say something that the provider does not want to by providing the service to the clients?
How would you answer that question? Like, what cases have they looked at before?
I think it's very contextual. I think the case that they looked at before in a different context was Boston had a parade in which the organizers of the parade did not want to include a float from a same-sex group. And the court said, well, yeah, if you put that float in there, it's going to interfere with the speech of the people who are organizing the parade. And so they found a First Amendment right of the parade organizers not to include the float that they didn't want to. So that was a speech kind of case. I think the other kind of example, again, is buying furniture. If a furniture seller says, I don't want to sell to this person, and I'm expressing something by not selling, I think the court's not going to buy that as really being speech. So this is why the case is so complex, is where does that line,
right,
where's the dividing line between what's speech and what isn't?
Because I'm sure the furniture maker is going to come forward and say, this is my freedom of speech, this is my freedom of religion. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So speaking with William Marshall again, UNC School of Law. So if you're on the Supreme Court, what would your criterion be? Where would you draw the line, or what standard would you use?
I think it's a very difficult standard. I think you have to take a look at the underlying activity. I think that in the case of a web design, they're providing a service. I mean, it's not really the speech of the person providing the service here. If somebody comes in and says, this is what I want to say, you know, it's my speech. That, I think, is different than if somebody is intruding themselves into a person's own speech. So, for example, a movie maker might legitimately say, no, I need to have a particular kind of person in this role, and if I don't, it's going to interfere with the message that I'm sending out, and that's part of that. The movie is obviously the part of that person's communication. I don't think the sale of a service by itself is part of the person's communication in the same way. But that's a very thin line.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think the Supreme Court's going to end up falling?
Well, whether the Supreme Court comes out where it should or where it's likely to go, I think...
Yeah, I guess these are two different questions.
Much different questions.
Yeah.
This court has found itself particularly sensitive to religious-based claims, whether those religious-based claims are based in the religion clauses or based in the speech clause.
Mm-hmm.
And they've sent out a signal that they're concerned that some of the effects of the same-sex marriage case before are putting religious people... honestly religious people in binds that those people don't want to be in. And I think some members of the court in particular are feeling that they need to defend those folks. So on that basis, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they come up on the side of the web designer.
There are equally sincere religious objections to interreligious marriages, interracial marriages in some cases. These are categories that are very explicitly in the text of the law protected by anti-discrimination law. That seems like that's next, right?
Well, it's certainly, you're right to point out that is part of the slippery slope. Now, there is an old case coming from Bob Jones University in
right.
which they claim that they had a First Amendment right to exclude or actually to prevent certain kinds of interracial dating, I believe, were the facts of that case.
Mm.
And the court said the interest in fighting racial discrimination overcomes that.
Right.
One of the interesting things about where Justice Kennedy was supporter of same-sex rights, but he never went so far as to say that sexual orientation was the same kind of category as religion or as race. So he never said that there was the same kind of compelling interest in protecting those rights as there is with race and religion. So the court might say, well, maybe this interest here in protecting same-sex rights is not as great historically as the rights protecting against discrimination on the basis of religion or race. But again, a very thin line, and certainly a very contestable line
mm-hmm.
when we take a look at the history of discrimination against LGBTQ people.
Speaking again with William Marshall, UNC School of Law, and as we wrap up this conversation, I think that's an important point for people to keep in mind about just the Supreme Court in general. Whenever a case gets to the Supreme Court, 99% of the time, it's a very difficult case with a very thin line separating one side from the other, and people tend to think about it in the political perspective, like it's this side versus that, and draw hard opinions. But it often comes down to these really, really narrow procedural questions. What should people take away from this conversation, and what should people be looking at when the Supreme Court finally issues its decision, which presumably will be June-ish, right?
I think what people should take away is the difficulty of these kinds of questions, and the compromises that these kind of questions necessarily entail. We can be really strongly committed to one side or another, but I think what we need to do is to try to understand where both sides are coming from. That's the job of the court, certainly, and I think that's the job of us when we're trying to measure whether the court's acting appropriately or not.
William Marshall, UNC School of Law professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you.